Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This season, we're supporting the Motor Neurone Disease Association's vision of a world free of MND. Whilst motor neurone disease leaves muscles no longer able to work, 35% of those affected also experience mild cognitive change. To support the charity's attempts to improve the quality of life for those with the disease, please donate to www.justgiven.com/TheBoroughBreakdownMND.
Support. Curtis Fleming is there on the edge of the area. Fleming for Craig Hignett. Hit it, Higgy. Higgy hits the treble!
Abanelli coming alive again. Janino wants the ball played to him. Abanelli spots out.
Welcome to the Borough Breakdown Podcast with Johnny, Dana and Tom. We are the Borough Podcast that gives you all of the Borough matchday chatter in a podcast. And in today's show, we channel Borough's home draw against Blackburn Rovers, Borough's transfer activity, we look ahead to Coventry and we answer your podcast questions. But first, the dust has settled after an eventful game against Blackburn Rovers. Guys, I want you to describe how you're feeling in three words. Tom, do you want to go first?
Yep, I thought about this. My three words are, we called it. We all said 1-1 last week. I was on Rovers Talk on Friday night, giving a Borough perspective of that. They all said 1-1. The host said 1-1. Everyone commenting in was 1-1. It was probably the most predictable Borough-Blackburn score that you could have had.
Absolutely manifesting the 1-1 draw. Dana, what's your three words?
Well, unlike Tom, I didn't think of this. I'm just going to go with quite entertaining, actually, because... To be fair, I said before the game that Borough Blackburn is quite a scrappy affair, and I think that there was a definite edge to the game, and it made it really entertaining, and I was surprised at the football that we played. I thought we actually played some good stuff, so it was quite a surprising game.
Yeah, I'm going to go good football, Neil, because I actually thought we played some decent stuff at times. I think it was nice to see Borough play the ball along the floor, getting in the transitions. I thought Tav yesterday was absolutely superb. And he was definitely up there in terms of man of the matches, but we'll come to our man of the matches very shortly. But let's chat about Blackburn, guys. And Dana, Middlesbrough switched to three at the back yesterday. Once again, Dale Fry, Hall and McNair all playing in the back line. But why do you think Neil Warnock decided to switch formations yesterday?
Probably because we didn't have Uche Piezu in the team, and we know what Uche offers us now. He's a striker that will back into centre-halves, that will commit them and pin them and try to use his sheer strength to out-muscle them, and we didn't have that. Matt Crooks is a player that, what Johnny Hansen said after the game, prefers the ball to feet, and the fact that we didn't have an out-and-out striker probably meant that Borough had to change tact, they had to change system as well, and... they had to really adapt their game, and as I said, and like you mentioned as well, we played some good stuff because of it, and I hope that even when Uche comes back that we play like that again, because you know it was good to see us not really, I mean, we still had a lot of long balls, I think 65, which was more than in the game against QPR, but they didn't really seem hopeful. It was more that they were there for a reason, really, to get it out wide. But yeah, the 3-5-2 really worked, and I think you've got a question about it, but I thought Paddy McNair was... It really confirmed to me that Paddy McNair is best in a back three.
Absolutely, it does. But we got a question from Rob Fletcher, and he did ask about this, but around the tactical switch and it being our best formation. But Tom, how do you think the tactical switch worked yesterday for Borough?
I thought it worked really well. One of the things I noticed that going forward, we had a lot more opportunity to kind of really stretch their defence. If you looked at some of the attack and build-up that we have, it was passed across the midfield quite a fair bit, and it'd go to the other side, usually, say, Dykesdale or Jones, and they had a lot of room because of the amount of players we had forward for their midfield and defence to try and cope with. I think, unfortunately, we didn't have kind of too much of a presence in the box to win any crosses. But what I noticed we were trying to do was kind of pull it back a little bit more and not cross as much yesterday. Dykesdale and Jones, I thought, were both doing that quite well. And I'll come on to it a little bit later on. But we've got a player now who seems to also like that that style of play. So if we carry on like that going forward, it'll suit him.
Absolutely. Well, Neil Warnock did mention his name in the post-match press conference, and he has signed today on El Hernandez on a one-year loan deal. We'll come to that in a second, Dana, but that tactical switch, who do you think it really benefited the most? Because, like Tom was saying there, we were playing a lot wider, but seeing Borough a lot more expansive as a team as well. But who do you think it really benefited?
Well, as I mentioned, Paddy McNair. I thought when Paddy McNair plays in midfield, he is pretty much anonymous, I would say. He has virtually no influence on the game, but when he is played in a back three, that's where you see him really step up and stand out. And I think he really benefited from that yesterday. And as I mentioned, that confirmed, if there was any doubt in my mind anyway, that that's his best position. And it also helped Johnny Howson as well. He was getting forward. He was sort of changing or interchanging that responsibility with Sam Morsey, that when Johnny Howson would go forward, Sam Morsey would hang back and vice versa. So probably them two players, I'd say. It didn't really benefit Watmore, but then again, I thought Watmore was quite rusty anyway, so you know, we'll let him off for that. But definitely Paddy.
We'll let you off, Duncan. All right, just this 1 week, all right? Just this 1 week. But yeah, I know, Dan, you spoke about Johnny Howson. I want to chat about his performance, because last week, We spoke about Howson having that Ledbetter last season syndrome, and I feel like it's not slagging him off. It's kind of like a case of, like,
just saying what you see, really.
Yeah, it's like having like a family dog who you love so much, and then, like, you know, it's coming towards its end, and you're thinking, nah, it's not. But like, he still shows glimpses of real quality. But Tom, yesterday, It showed that Johnny Howson can still be around this team and still play a really big part in Borough's season this year. But does it show that he has a lot more to give now, like given the performance yesterday?
Yeah, I mean, I said last week that I still think he had a role to play this season as part of that centre midfield. I know we've got options there to come in and you know, start games where he might be on the bench. And I mean, fair play to him yesterday. We spoke about him a lot last week. I think I was pretty hard on him after the QPR game, because I didn't think he did well in that game at all. And to be fair, I think from what Warnock said yesterday, if that was true, he'd actually agree with that, because apparently he said to Warnock that, you know, I agree that I should have been left out at Derby. But yesterday, you could see the turnaround and the amount of improvement week on week. Just from the positions he was getting into, he was able to read the game a little bit better than he was doing against QPR. Dana mentioned it there, with Sam Morsey dropping back, it was allowing him to get forward quite a lot. And you only have to look at the goal he scored. I'm not necessarily talking about the chip, but just the desire to get forward. And you could see the sprint. I mean, it just still showed the physical attributes there, showing that he does still have stuff to offer this season.
Yeah, I'll have a fish and Johnny Howson, please, because it was an absolute delightful trip, wasn't it? But yeah, Tommy, Warnock did mention in his press conference that he had to drop him from that poor performance. But do you think it was needed so he could get back to that, like, a performing at a higher level, in a sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, I mean, judging by that and the way he kind of sounded in his own post-match interview, you can see he's the type of professional that would take that on board and think, right, you know what, I do need to do better next time. And you could see there was that extra bit of motivation there yesterday, I think.
Yeah, I think it shows well that everyone on this side is droppable. I think it has to be. I don't think you can have anyone in this team that has like his name on the sheet consistently. I mean, when Tav's fit, I think he probably isn't an undroppable player at the moment, but it's good to have competition for places. So if you do drop below those levels, you are put on the bench or dropped altogether. But Dana, why do you think Housen played well? So well yesterday. Was it just a mental thing? But what did he do well?
He just read the game better, I think. And I mean, the only stain on his performance was him losing the ball in the build up to Sam Gallagher's goal. But to be fair, it's not that big of a stain for me because he played so well that I almost forgot about that. And he had the desire, and you could tell that he was really wanting to overcome that performance against QPR because, as Tom said, Neil Warnock mentioned it after the game, that Johnny Housen himself said that he deserved to be dropped. He came back against Derby off the bench and he did perform well. I thought he was good and bright when he came on. And that's all you really want from a player. If they do drop a stinker like Housen did, then what you want to do after that is to recover from it, and he did. And to be fair, it was probably the best performance I've seen from Johnny Housen in a long time.
Yeah, I think anyone could argue that probably is one of the best performances we've seen in his Borough career, to be honest. I thought it was a very, very good polished display from him. And also, I quite like the two of Housen and Morsey as well. I think that give the likes of Tav the freedom to roam forward and drive with the ball, get forward, and I thought it really benefited us. When I seen the lineup initially, I thought, oh, Isaiah Jones wing back, that screams like, oh God, please don't do that. But it just seemed to work. I think Warnock got his tactics right. I thought we nullified Blackburn to some extent. I thought we were able to win the midfield battles with Housen and Morsey in midfield. And it just seemed that we played good. I think the only reason we drew, I think, yesterday was just the lack of quality, I think.
Mm, I agree.
Do you think that the lack of finishing and Middlesbrough's inability to create and finish chances is probably the reason why we are 13th so far?
Yeah, definitely. I'd agree with that. I did think Blackburn defended well yesterday. Like I said, with that five across the midfield, we were stretching them quite a lot. But they did have quite a lot of players in them central areas to cut out any crosses or block any shots. I think it just kind of comes down to that, really. We've created chances in other games as well and not being able to put them away. So I think, obviously, ahead of the deadline on Tuesday, it just highlights the need for another striker.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the only black mark on Borough's performance, really, is I just wish we tested their centre-backs a little bit more. Like, I know I'll say about Dani Ayala, but he is a ticking time bomb. Like, he will give you an opportunity in games, and I just don't think we tested him enough yesterday. But then again, I thought we did enough probably to win the game, but we just unfortunately didn't do that.
I think in terms of like a missed opportunity yesterday, and I've mentioned this in our group chat as well, their goalkeeper looked really shaky, in my opinion. I think he was flapping at everything. He was punching stuff that he could have caught. He wasn't holding on to anything. I think there was possibly a missed opportunity there to pressure him a bit more. I think it's a bit ironic because we're always kind of wanting to see more kind of passing football and less long ball and stuff. But for me, it seems like long ball would have worked yesterday if we'd have like put Crooks in front of the keeper to cause that type of distraction and panic him a little bit. There was definitely a mistake in their keeper yesterday.
Yeah, absolutely. I think even if Uche was playing yesterday and it was against Dani Ayala, it would have been a really nice, probably, a nice matchup, to be honest, because Uche gets himself about a little bit more, but then also Dani Ayala is like, he just tries to strangle anyone, so it'd been nice to see. But yesterday, I think we did miss an opportunity, especially when they went down to 10 men. But it was nice of Sam Morsey to get a red card as well. I think it was good faith from him. You know, it's always hard to play against 10 men, so it was going away. But Tom, the two red cards yesterday, do you think they were both justifiable?
No. I mean, the Morsey one, I had a really good kind of eye line of. From where I'm sat in kind of the northeast corner, it was kind of like right front facing to me. And to me, it didn't look like there was much, if any, contact from Morsi at all in him. I think their play only went down when they went shoulder to shoulder and he got floored. I didn't think that was even worthy of a yellow card, to be honest. For me, the ball was there to be won. Both players had a right to go for it. Their player got in there first, and he only really went down when he went shoulder to shoulder and when he saw where his pass was going. But also, I think if the roles were reversed for the other red card and Blackburn, I think we'd have been furious about that. Looking back on it this morning, I do think it was a very kind of clumsy thing to do, because he didn't even look anywhere near the ball.
He was on yellow as well, wasn't he?
Yeah. And to be fair, I thought his first yellow card looked more like more of a red in real time. I was worried for Jones because it just looked like he'd flew in out of nowhere and absolutely clattered him. And then Jones got up and walked off. And I was like, well, thank God for that because it looked nasty. But yeah, I think if that had happened and we'd have seen it real time happen to a Borough player and get sent off for it, we'd have been fuming about it. But having watched the highlights this morning, I can see why there'd be an argument for that second yellow.
Well, let's chat about the officiating then, Dana, because Michael Selsbury yesterday has been promoted to the Premier League for the end of the season as well. So how would you rate his performance yesterday? Because I know we don't really chat about officials too much. We leave that to Neil Warnock as well. So, but like, how would you rate the officiating yesterday? Because he seemed to have a bit of a stinker, didn't he?
Yeah, but it's just typical of a Championship referee, really, isn't it? And I thought he just didn't have control of the game throughout. There was a lot made about Borough's midfield in the QPR game not having control of the game, but in this match it wasn't the midfield, it was the referee that just did not have any sort of grip on the game whatsoever. And I almost feel like he sent Sam Morsi off to, I don't know, like he almost got caught up in the storm of the game, because there was definitely an edge to the game, specifically in the second half. There was a lot of pent-up frustration, I think, from the first half. And it just felt like he got caught in it, the referee, and it was like he sent Sam Morsi off just to almost level things up and to make himself feel better. I don't know, it was bizarre. I don't think that was a red, the Sam Morsi one. Their second yellow, I don't know. I mean, when you're on a yellow, you don't want to be putting your boot in like that, to be fair.
Yeah, but he gave him a decision to make, really, didn't he?
Yeah.
I think when you look at the type of referees in this division, it's a very difficult task. I think even when you've got Neil Warnock on the sideline, I feel like it's a little bit intimidating to some extent. But in that first half, I thought he was very looking for the minor details all the time, being
There was a moment where there was a bottle on the pitch from the corner, and he was so pedantic to go over there and move it. Like, fair enough, we don't want a Darren Bent beach ball situation, but it just felt a little bit unnecessary almost.
Well, the thing is, look, you are getting assessed. Like, every referee gets assessed in every game of the season. And for me, like, you probably wouldn't have been marked down on that. Like, the bottle was off the pitch. Like, he didn't even have to move it. Like, it was pointless. All pointless. I feel like he kind of just, I think he got a little bit worried. I feel like he just kept, like, he was losing the game, so he was trying to stop start it, trying to get more control. But by doing so, he lost control of the game by doing too much too soon. But Tom, how would you rate the actual officiating, like, across the Championship? Because we've spoken about it numerous times now. But how would you think we could potentially improve it? VAR, maybe?
I mean,
extra officials?
I've spoken about VAR before on this podcast and said I was in favour of it. I feel like I remember they have made some changes to it this season in the Premier League, and it does seem to, the games do seem to be flowing a little bit better so far. So I'd still be in favour of putting it in the Championship, because I look at the referees in the Championship now, like, it'll usually like come out about, you know, a day or two before we play a match, and people are like, oh God, it's him. There's about two decent referees in the Championship, and I couldn't name them, but just the amount of times that comes out and be like, oh, so and so's the referee today, just like, oh, for God's sake, like, it's just going to be an awful game. I do think they need help in some capacity in the Championship, because the overall standard's just poor.
Yeah, well, that's it. Like, you're in the second class division, you're going to get second class referees. Like, you're not going to get the best. Like, at the end of the day, they're still trying to grow to become the Premier League referee. They're going to make mistakes. They probably need more help as well. But if Morsi doesn't get his red card overturned now, we could potentially see the Egyptian miss the next three games, really, and that could leave Borough very late on the ground in terms of numbers, in terms of squad depth. And Dan, I want to come to this because we put a tweet out earlier this week, didn't we, around Borough having 23 squad players. Three of them are currently injured, so that, 20 players, less, some of them will have less than five games for the Borough. So what positions should we look at and improve and strengthen? Because it seems like we could be very, very late on the ground.
Yeah, there's a few positions that Borough will no doubt be looking to focus on. But there's a few that stick out for me that are more, I would want Borough to look at this rather than we need to look at this. There's the obvious left back, up front, out wide. But I'd like to see us sign a centre-half, and specifically a left-sided centre-half, because I just look at our squad and I just see wing-backs. I see a 3-5-2. Or a variant of that. And if post Warnock, we bring in a manager that plays a more progressive style, that wants to bring the ball out from the back, that isn't against being risky in possession, then I think we will need a left-footed centre-half. I still think that even if we play a 4-3-3, that we need one. Because like you mentioned last week, it just changes the angles of the passes out from the back. So that would be good in terms of comfort, I guess, and balance across the back line. I know, and hear me out here, because I know what people are going to think about this. Jared Branthwaite is apparently being made available by Everton. 6'5", comfortable bringing the ball out from the back. Seems to be physical just because of his height. And he likes to boot people in the face, as we all know.
And he has championship experience. Nailed on.
Yeah. I mean, fair enough. His loan spell at Blackburn might not have been spectacular. I think he was in the shadow of Taylor Harwood-Bellis, who is at Johnny?
Anderlecht.
Yep, he's at Anderlecht now.
He's struggling as well.
Is he?
Yeah, he's struggling.
Oops. But yeah, he's a player with potential and a really high ceiling, so he could be somebody. I don't know whether Everton are wanting to get rid of him permanently or on loan, but he's someone that I would like Borough to look at. And then midfield as well, because I look at, and it's weird to say that, because in pre-season we were looking at midfield as a position where we don't need any more options, but I do feel like that holding midfield position, if we could bring somebody in like a Ryan Ledson, for example. I mean, Ryan Ledson would be a fantastic sign, but I think he's probably one for a top six championship club.
Preston?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say he's one of Preston's best players, if not the best player for them.
He's the only player, isn't he? I don't even know about
might be. But no, he's somebody like holding midfielder with playmaker abilities, someone with the ability to make progressive passes, key passes, to be essentially a creative influence from that deep midfield position, which I don't really feel as though we have as much as we will need. So they're two positions that I would like Borough to strengthen.
So do you think it's a case of quality over than quantity then?
Oh, I don't know. It's a mix of both, really, because it's not sustainable what we've got at the moment. I think with Nathan Wood going to Hibs, then that would leave us with 22 senior players. So that's a team. And then another, that's like two teams, which isn't sustainable. So it's probably a mix of both, I think. Obviously, we don't want to sign players for the sake of it, just to fill options in the squad. But yeah, I would say a mix of both, definitely.
Where's Sam Stubbs at?
He's not selling cod anymore because he's not at Fleetwood.
Oh, is he not?
I don't know where he is, actually.
Well, if anyone knows where Sam Stubbs is, please contact the Borough Breakdown. But Tom, I want to hear your thoughts on this as well, because Dana mentioned a few positions there. Would you echo her thoughts there? Would you say that Borough probably need to look at a couple of positions, centre-half, maybe obviously left-back, midfield? What do you think?
Well, left-back is the first one for me. This is working off the assumption that Sparrat is going to be signing in the next couple of days, and we've already got a second-choice striker lined up, another option at striker lined up. Left-back, I think this was kind of highlighted yesterday with Bowler not being able to play for whatever reason. Obviously, he came off the bench, but there must have been a reason why he was dropped for it, and we went with that formation. But one of the things I noticed Blackburn did in the second half, which another left-back could have been really useful for, was they made the change at half-time to bring on, I can't remember his name, McGloyer or something like that.
I'll get you the name.
Right. So they made the change at half-time to bring him on, and Isaiah Jones struggled a little bit against him second half. just because it did look like he had the physical attributes to go up against Jones and come out with the ball a few times, and that was effectively Blackburn's way of trying to nullify his second half. Joe Bennett was mentioned this week as like an option that we're talking to. Obviously, yesterday you'd have been nowhere near match fit, so this kind of, he wouldn't have been able to help instantly yesterday. But knowing the type of player that he is, if he'd have been able to get forward and overlap Jones there, then, you know, they were all too occupied with Jones to, you know, look at another option running down that wing. So that's where I think we could have possibly done better yesterday, and that's where I think, you know, the lack of options there has kind of affected us yesterday. I ideally want to see two more strikers. Like I said, hopefully Sparrow being one of them, but I'd like to see a third striker there as well, since we only really play with one striker per game. And yesterday we've had to put Duncan Watmore at striker, who I prefer to see out wide as well. And I definitely agree with Dana about the left-footed centre-back. You know, I'd love to see us bring one in before the deadline. If not, I think we've got the options there to kind of make do. You know, in Bamber and Peltier, who can both play centre-back, but neither of them being left-footed. You know, long term, I think we do need a left foot centre back there.
That's it. I think it comes with like the angles, doesn't it? And I think with Bury, if for a centre half, you need like one needs to be ball playing, one needs to be a kicker, and obviously, I don't think we really fully have that. I don't think Grant Hall's like a much of a kicker centre back. Do you know what I mean?
If you heard of the cat dog centre half combination.
Is that what,
like, the dog's the aggressive one? That,
yeah.
Is the kicker, the IRler, I guess, and then the cat's the one that sort of takes the ball up in the back.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm getting at. Yeah, so like for me, yeah, absolutely. I think that's why I really enjoyed Borough playing with a three yesterday. I think when you've got McNair and you've got Fry, both very, very good at like getting the ball out wide. You know what I mean? It was really nice yesterday to see McNair, you know, create that little bit of pocket of space and then just switch the play to Jones, and I was just like. Yeah. This is Neil Warnock's been listening to the podcast and listening to us speak, because that is exactly what we wanted to see, and it really worked. I think in terms of positional players, yeah, absolutely. Probably another right back, maybe. I think
I feel like goalkeeper and right back are the positions that we've got options in. I think Spence, Dykstill. I know Daniel Fisher's out for the season.
Yeah, I want to come up with it because Ched wasn't in the 18 yesterday. So
very true.
I know when we spoke to Craig Johnson from the Gazette, it was kind of like he's probably not going to go, but. We actually might see it happen, because if you think about it, Middlesbrough, in a business sense, might have to probably sell a first teamer in the next couple of days to really balance the books. But in terms of positional, probably right back cover, you can look at centre back, left back as well. You've also probably got, I would like to see a bit more quality, maybe up top as well. I think yesterday's shown that Corbyn's not ready yet. He needs game time. So I think for me, I think you need to probably try and bring a two forwards to really push positions and get competition for places. I mean, it would be hilariously, yesterday probably might have suited Chuba Akpom, but you never know, he's gone now, isn't he? So since we were playing on the deck, it might have actually suited him. But let's chat about Jed Spence, because yesterday he wasn't in the 18 at all. Nothing mentioned in terms of injuries. There's obviously been murmurs of Premier League interest as well with Everton and Wolves. But if it's him or someone else, do you actually expect a first teamer to probably leave in before Tuesday?
It depends on who we bring in, really. Actually, with Ornel Hernandez, we do have 23 senior players, with Nathan Wood poised to leave. But I just don't feel like we're in a position to let a player go, to be honest. Young players, yeah, the likes of maybe Sam Fallarin, Jeremy Sivvy potentially.
Yeah, Jack Robinson went out on loan at Yeovil yesterday.
He did, yeah, good move for him. I can't really see it unless we bring in maybe two or potentially three options before the deadline. I just can't see it happening.
Can't. Okay, Tom?
I'm looking at that deal and thinking Spencer's the only one I could see going. Especially if there's Premier League interest. But what I'm thinking is those clubs, I think Southampton and Leicester were the ones mentioned, they'll be paying for potential there. And we can potentially get, you know, a fair bit for him, which could fund other moves, hopefully with a sell-on fee included as well. And I think kind of long-term, as a scouting setup, I feel like that's what we're going for with the likes of, you know, the signings of like Jones, Dykstale, Baller, these young players who have been coached to be better and we can sell on for profit. I think Jed could potentially be one that we do sell on for profit and then reinvest in the squad, similar to how, you know, Brentford have done over the years. So if he does go, I'm expecting that to be just to bring in money to fund further transfers, and we must have something lined up on the deadline. And I feel like we probably will on the deadline, because I feel like Neil Warnock's the new Harry Redknapp. I think he'll be getting interviewed on Sky Sports on his bike rather than out his car.
Loves it on TalkSport, doesn't he? Loves it. But I think Borough are going to have a few deals lined up, to be honest. I can definitely see us being a little busy. But also, it makes business sense for us to try and get some cash. We need something has to give, really. I can't see Borough making what... I'm going to make a prediction, probably about 13, 14 transfers, and then barely anyone like leave on a permanent. Do you know what I mean? Someone's going to go. Or one or two. Obviously, there's always been that moment about Morsy potentially leaving, but I think that's absolute tosh. I don't think he'll go. Spence, of course, like, is probably the only realistic one that can see leaving. I don't see Tav or McNair or Fry going unless we get like a mad bid. I think we have a question about that later on, so we'll come on to that. But let's chat about incomings then. On Sunday, Borough announced the 10th signing of the summer in Norwich winger Ornel Hernandez on a one-year loan deal. To gain a Norwich fan perspective, here's a snippet from Jacob from the Canary Cast podcast explaining why Borough fans may enjoy the new signing.
The thing with Ornel, and you'll quickly find this out, Borough fans, is he looked very, very promising, because he doesn't know what he's doing with it. No, the defenders can't contain it. When he's on it, no defense.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And the cricket tailor that I've seen, you can listen to every single Norwich player and say, oh, who's the strongest in the team? And they all say Ornel Hernandez. So difficult to knock off the ball. Like I say, very direct on from that left wing. He can play right wing as well. He played right wing back for us a couple of times when we were chasing games and had to go to five at the back and try and get real width and two forwards on the pitch. He did very well there at times. Again, very direct and just whipping it in on his right peg, which would be interesting to see where Warnock plays him. But he's predominantly from the left. Does like to cut in. He can use his left. I wouldn't say that's a strong point of his. That he's equally adaptable on both. He is right-footed. And you can clearly see that. His shooting is sporadic, I'll be honest. Whilst he scored 9 goals for us and scored against yourselves when we won and won promotion, there were times where you're like, don't shoot, Ornel, don't shoot. Or sometimes he does delay on the ball, but he'll carry the ball up the pitch for you and you will love him. He's such a lovable character. No one at Norwich dislikes him. He does come back and defend really well. Like I say, I remember when we were playing Arsenal in the Premier League a couple of years ago, and he was brilliant. That was such a good defensive display from him, and he will work his socks off. He's not one of those wingers who will just kind of flounce around and only be active as soon as the ball's in the final third. He will work hard for your team, and he will die for that badge. That, and that's all you want for your players, really, to come in and really give that desire.
So thanks for that, Jacob. And you can watch that full YouTube clip on the Canary Cast's YouTube channel, and then also on the other podcast as well. So go on, search them at the Canary Cast too. But guys, let's chat about Ornel Hernandez. Tommy, you happy with the transfer?
Yeah, definitely. I think he's going to offer something to the team that we kind of need on both sides at the moment. I've done a bit of research into him.
Yeah, well, what do you think he can bring to this side then?
Well, used who scored for this and looked at all his data. So I think, first of all, his playing time has gradually been decreasing for Norwich in the last couple of years, so he might take a couple of weeks to get up to speed initially, because the last time he was playing consistently for Norwich was the 2018-2019 season, when he was kind of a vital part of their promotion push. He brings pace to the team, mainly on the left-hand side, as that's where the majority of his minutes are. So not sure if we're going to try and put him on that right-hand side instead, with Jones playing so well on the left as it is. But during that season, I'm taking that team because it's the one with the most consistent minutes, and you know we know from that what he can offer in a championship campaign. 8 goals and 9 assists. We've got 2.2 shots per game, 1.7 key passes per game, and 1.7 dribbles. And that's showing he's the type of player to run at the defences and create. He's also fouled 1.5 times per game as well. So we can see that he's going to draw fouls, which are going to play into our hands for set pieces.
Oiling his arms up there.
interestingly, though, he's got 0.4 crosses per game, which in comparison, Isaiah Jones currently 0.8.
Sammy Amiobi is very similar as well, isn't it, in terms of that?
Yeah. So who scored actually has crossing as a weakness for Ornel Hernandez. So the stats are showing that he prefers to make shorter passes cut inside. So I don't know if we're going to adapt a little bit more to play that type of style, or whether we're going to need him to adapt and create crosses as more of a part of his game. But there's going to be some compromise needed there. But as well, he's dispossessed or has bad control 2.1 and 2.2 times per game, respectively. So that kind of indicates that he holds onto the ball a little bit too long at times. In comparison, Jones at the moment only dispossessed 0.6 times per game. Although with Jones, it is going to look better due to a smaller sample size. Obviously, that's five games versus the course of a season. But we can kind of tell that from the stats for Hernandez at Norwich. So
we'll get Bruno in.
I wish. We don't get enough penalties, as we saw yesterday.
No,
so
we don't.
well, what do you think positionally, tactically, you can bring to Borland Dana?
Well, as Jacob mentioned in the video snippet, he's somebody that is adaptable. He can play wing back, or has played wing back at times. So if we do play with 3-5-2 or a variant of that, then he would be a good wide option. He predominantly plays on the left and cuts in with his right. And I think that just, it really feeds into what we've mentioned a few times, that we don't really have these out-and-out wingers. We have players that are just going to cut in and get shots off, essentially. And Tav's one of those, where he works it from the right into the centre and then he will get shots off. And I just feel like he has that flexibility to be able to play in different systems, which is what we need, because I don't feel like we'll have a set-and-forget system and formation this season. We will change and chop and change. And in terms of tactically, he's just someone that, in terms of Warnock's style of play, obviously there is a big onus on the wingers and a big emphasis on getting it out to those wide players. And he's someone that obviously is incredibly direct. So I do feel like he'll really suit the Neil Warnock style of play.
So just when you were saying that, do you think you might see like a very small tweak in Borough's system then? I think what you were saying there, Tom, around like, crossing might be lacking for Hernandez. So do you think you'll see like some sort of tweak in Borough's system, maybe like play with inverted wingers, maybe?
Yeah, potentially. And try and get more kind of short passes into the box. Maybe short passes into Uche to hold up and kind of lay off to someone else.
Crooks are getting on it. Pav, you know, I can see it.
Yeah, it seems like a complete change of system of what we've been used to for the last couple of years. And it's a welcome change as well, because it wasn't exactly working the last couple of years, was it? But yeah, I feel like we will probably go with that. I think it'd be interesting to see him on the left and Tav on the right both being able to cut in and shoot on the dominant foot. Obviously, that's not saying I want Jones to be dropped, because I think he's been probably one of our best players, if not our best so far this season. But it'd be an interesting kind of hypothetical to see.
Do you think it'd be a bad thing though if Jones was dropped? Is it a bad thing really for someone who's so young?
Not necessarily, because Maddo was saying it after the game yesterday that he's going to go through spells where he isn't as influential to the attack and we are going to have to look elsewhere. So obviously, as a young player, he will go through those ups and downs. There's no straight line with Isaiah Jones now. It's, you know, he will run into a tricky spell, and we can't really be solely reliant on one player. This isn't, you know, the Adama Traore season. So yeah, we need more options and to maybe take the heat off Jones a little bit.
Do you think there's an over-reliance now?
I don't know. I wouldn't say it's approached that territory yet, but I certainly feel like we are maybe getting there. Because, I mean, we've got Anthony Dykstale on the other wing, which, I mean, Dykstale...
Yeah, he got an assist yesterday.
He did, yeah. It was a good ball to be fair. God knows where the Blackburn defence was. But Dykstale at Charlton was quite a... He was a fullback that did get forward, but as we've mentioned, I do feel as though his future is more centrally, potentially, or even just sort of standard right back. But yeah, we're maybe going towards that direction, but I don't think we will get there, because obviously we brought in Hernandez now, and hopefully we can bring somebody else in. Sparrow can play across the front line, I believe, so could potentially see him play out wide as well.
Yeah, and you mentioned Tav there as well on the wings. Do you think that he should stay wing, or do you think it'd be more central now? Would you like to see him more central?
I think he can play both, and I think it depends the type of system that we try and play. I mentioned wing because we love to see him being the Championship Arjen Robben and cutting in on his left and just pinging him far corner, but I do think that he can play number 10 and do well there as well. So I think he's probably equally effective at both.
Yeah, okay, fair enough then. I think before we come on to commentary and potential changes, well, let's chat about podcast questions. And it's the questions that you ask us over Twitter, and we include them in the podcast as well. I'm going to kick things off, guys, with James. And he says, did Watkins of Fry, Tav, Paddy getting sold next year go under the radar? And if that's the case, are we wasting their last year with one? Dana, do you want to take that one?
Sorry, I got distracted there. What, Paddy, Dale and Tav?
Yeah, so I'll go back to it. So did Warnock's comments of Fry, Tav, Paddy getting sold next year go under the radar? And if that's the case, are we wasting their last year with Warnock? So you were drinking your hot chocolate there, weren't you? That was all it was.
No, it was something else. You'll see it in a minute. But no, I did read that. I did make a note of that, sorry, in Warnock's press conference. And I don't know, I read it more as you're not going this summer rather than you're going next summer sort of thing. And I don't know whether that makes any sense, because there's a crossover between the two. But I think realistically, we have to look at this in this way. We aren't exactly an attractive club for players. You know, we are a Championship club. And I don't feel like that is going to change anytime soon. I'd love for it to, but there will be plenty of suitors for Tav. Tav, in particular, is a Premier League player in the making. Dale Fry's come on tremendously under Neil Warnock. He's really bulked up. I think he's become a man, I think, under Neil Warnock. Whereas before, he was almost just... He wasn't really there in the physical game, whereas now I think he is, and he can match these big, strong centre forwards. And then Paddy, obviously, under Neil Warnock has been fantastic, so there'll be plenty of suitors. And we can't keep these players for long term. It's just not realistic. They will have their own individual ambitions that stretch beyond Middlesbrough Football Club. So, yeah, if we don't get promoted this season, I think we would be lucky to keep one of them.
Yeah, I think it's high. I think Tab's the main one. I think.
Yeah.
I think with Tab, I think your Tab. He's after his performance yesterday and what he's been like this season. Yeah, he's irreplaceable at the moment. But hey, you never know. You got Martin Pagero on the bench, and he won't be ready in his 2030. Look, Tom, we'll come to the next one. And Dom said, while I rate Mossy, do you think his temperament is becoming a liability? Did you think it is?
I wouldn't say so, just because I don't think it happens consistently. But what I will say about yesterday was he was told off by a ref about 4 times before he had to make that decision.
He's like a naughty child, isn't he?
Yeah. I mean, I can understand why Sam Morsi was reacting in the way he was after some of them tackles, because there was one of them he clearly got the ball and the ref blew it back for a foul.
Was that the Broughton Diaz one where he slid in?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I was like, that's a brilliant tackle. And then all of a sudden, the ref almost let the play continue, and then all of a sudden decided it was a foul. It was just like, right, okay.
These Chileans play acting, you know.
But yeah, I think that was the only thing about yesterday. I think he kicked off with the referee about 4 times, and then eventually I think the ref was just looking for an excuse to send him off.
Yeah, true. I know why he got distracted now, didn't I? I just seen the message from... Well, you must mention him. With Danny Beardmore sent us the next question. He said, I think after the international break, we have to kick on, and the time for excuses for blaming things is irrelevant. It's up to Warnock to get the results. Do you think that's fair, Dana?
Yeah, I think it is, because this international break is now a window of opportunity for Borough to get the players on the training pitch. I think Sparrow's on international duty, isn't he? So that's a shame, pardon me. It's a week or two where Borough can really try to bed the players into the system and really try different things as well, because now we've got Hernandez, there's a lot of adaptability there in the system and in the personnel as well. I was going to say that players that are sidelined might be back, but obviously we've got 3 long-term absentees, so that we need a little bit more than 2 weeks. But yeah, for me, the excuse is really... ran quite thin a long time ago, because as I mentioned a lot, Neil Warnock is a manager that everyone always mentions it. It's got the record promotions out of this division, and I think we need to see that acumen, the managerial acumen from Neil Warnock, regardless of situation. Of course, it's not ideal that he hasn't got the options that he wants, and that's probably the excuse that I can maybe go with.
Yeah.
But everything else in terms of the refs, the clicks last season, the no strikers last season, I don't buy those.
Got excuses, Don. I think with this question, I know you have your pre-season predictions. For me, I feel like I'm going to go into another question. It's from Nick. He says, what have you made of the first 5 games based on pre-season expectations? But we'll come on to that actually quite nicely. I've kind of moved my position on it a little bit, because although I said 8th to 10th, I'm still kind of there if I had a gun up my head kind of thing, but I'm probably not going to judge Borough now until December and March. I think that is the key period in any season. If you pick up some form around then, that title, that promotion, that anywhere, or you get relegated, that is the key position of the season where you really need to start a kick on. If we're struggling November, we're still mid-table, I think Warnock will still be around if we're still in and around it. If we're way off the pace, that's where I think we'll change it. But if not, I think that November, December time, if we're in and thereabouts, that's when we have to really, really kick on and gel and just click. If we don't, then that's it for me. What have you guys made of the first 5 games of the season, and based on your pre-season expectations?
Been a bit disappointed with them, to be honest. I mean, I know I mentioned last week, kind of putting things in perspective, that it was the same record as we had under Ito before we went up, before that international break. And that international break was probably the time where things did get turned around and worked on, and we really kind of kicked on after that. So I'd hope for a kind of similar effect this year. But particularly QPR and Derby last week, I was really disappointed with. I didn't think the Derby result was a good result at all. And QPR, it was kind of like I'd sum it up like that Brentford game last season, not last season, the year before, under Woodgate, where we had 45 absolutely excellent minutes yeah. and then came out with a different team in the second half.
Yeah.
That seemed what it was like against QPR. But then we've played all right against other teams. I did think, even though it was 1-1 yesterday, we played well against Blackburn. Warnock said it in his press conference, actually the best football we've played since he's been here, and I'd probably agree with that. So I think there's reasons to be optimistic. I do prefer how we're playing this season to how we were last season.
Yeah.
But also, we really do need to kick on if promotion or playoffs was the target this year.
There's still time, of course. I know that you're disappointed. But Dana, you echoing Tom's thoughts there?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, I thought that we would start the season well and then tail off, which we could still tail off, but the start of the season I did expect us to pick up more points. I wasn't expecting anything against Fulham because it's Fulham. They are by far the best team in the league, so the fact that we got a point out of that is fantastic. But the games against QPR, Derby in particular, we should have got more from that. And then yesterday it was a good performance, but we just didn't have that extra bit of quality. And I don't know, I'm a little bit confused with Borough at the moment, because if we play like that yesterday and just add that little bit more, I would love that. But then there's games like Derby where I look at the team so far this season, and I know it's a small sample size, but I still feel as though we are a bit Jekyll and Hyde from like last season. So I don't know, I am with you in judging the team really towards that Christmas, New Year period, where that's where we will see whether we do have the minerals, to quote Jonathan Woodgate, of going up, or, you know, we'll see where we are there. But yeah, there's been positives and negatives, so I'm a little bit on the fence, I think, in regards to our season.
That's absolutely fine. I think it's good to be on the fence for until that December, March period, really. I think that's where we should be. I'm probably not going to comment on it a little bit more. I think that's I'm just going to wait and see if it clicks. Is there going to be extra quality there? I think game management-wise, there's things that can be ironed out, but the reason why Middlesbrough in the Championship and have been in the Championship for so long is that we are very, very inconsistent across the board. And to be honest, like, that's the Championship in a nutshell, isn't it? Like, you know, like, I was on Twitter the other day, and I was chatting about Tuukka Rakpo, and someone was saying, oh, I think you only scored 28 goals in 8 years. And I was like, well, Borough have only been in the Premier League 1-12, so, like, you know what I mean? That's like how shows real inconsistency across the board for us. But we'll move on to the final two questions. Mike says three positives and three negatives so far. One each, one positive each, one negative each. Do that way.
Yeah.
I'd say the style of play as a positive. I think the first few games that we've seen them, Ikpeazu and Crooks, the same. I mean, it's sort of a refreshing change from what we had in, like, Brits, Akpom, Fletcher, in that these two were going to absolutely work their hearts out and battle up front. What I think ties in with is that, you know, when we signed Hall last year, Warnock was on about these players who, like, be a 7 or 8 every match. I feel like that's what we've got with them, even if they're not spectacular at times. They're at least putting the effort in to be a 7 or 8 every match, which I don't think we've had at the top of the pitch for a while. Mm. Negatives, I don't know. Can go to Dana for a positive while I think about this.
Go on, Dana, be positive.
I would probably say positives have been Ikpeazu. I've been really happy with him. He's just the type of player that we need. And even though I was a massive defender of Britt, and I hate to compare the two because I just feel it's unnecessary.
Scored yesterday for his new team.
He did, yeah. Balotelli's strike partner as well, which is just crazy. But I think it really shows what Britt didn't have. You know, Britt did back into the centre-halves, but he just didn't have the physicality really to execute it. And I think Uche's been, he's been fantastic. He seems like a really likeable guy as well, that he's, obviously, he went to Scotland. It didn't work out for him. I think he got released by Watford, so he's really had to work his way back up. And he looks really good. Love his goal celebrations afterwards. He seems to love the West Stand.
Yeah,
he
loves it, doesn't he?
At the Riverside, he really does. But he's been a massive positive for me. Just a focal point up front, someone that will cause problems for defenders, and I think he's a real handful.
Yeah, I'm going to go Matt Crooks, I think.
He was my other positive as well.
Yeah, probably best sign of the lot. Been absolutely brilliant. And probably to have coming back as well. It just shows how much we rely on him. But any negatives, guys? You got any negatives at all?
Yeah, I thought a man, though. the defensive troubles of the first few games. I didn't see that so much yesterday when we went back to free. But it's like I said against QPR, like the goals were like someone's controller had run out of battery on FIFA and the defenders just weren't asked. Like they just walked through us and they didn't really do anything about it. So I hope yesterday was the start of it being kind of back to a more solid defence, because it seemed the opposite issue to what we had last season against QPR, and that we were scoring goals but we also couldn't keep it out of our own net.
Yeah, fair enough. Defensive issues. Dana?
Has to be squad depth. It's really worrying that we have, I mean, we played Tiosi Alassane up front yesterday, which I think he can play that, but we are a couple of injuries or a couple of COVID positive tests away from having a really incredibly threadbare squad, more so than now. So that's probably the negative, but hopefully that will be rectified with the next couple of days of the transfer window.
Yep, squad depth and defensive issues. I'm going to say some of Warlock's comments, I think, just grinded on me. Grinds on me at times, but, I mean, get over it. I'll chat about Alassane then, Dana. From Jake, he said, what's your initial thoughts on Alassane? I know he had a short run out, but interested to see if he's potentially likely to be in and around the first team or likely to be in under-23s. Alassane has now got one more minute than Martin Pajero after a few games. Just a fun fact of the day.
Oh, that was a wonderful tweet from Michael in the Van La Parra threshold.
Oh, yeah, Van La Parra threshold, yeah. Great little thing, that. I love that. But Alassane, any initial thoughts, guys? Or way too early to tell?
It's probably way too early to tell, but there was still positives that I think that we could have taken from that performance. I mean, he looks rapid. He also looks like he's got that strength in him as well. And I think he did cause a few problems for the centre-halves in again, backing into the centre-halves, which is something that I think was welcomed, obviously, without Uche Piezu. And the overriding positive from that performance was when he absolutely slam-dunked Lewis Travis on the floor. That was absolutely brilliant.
Lewis Travis, one of my captains from one of my Boris saves, actually. Sorry, Lewis.
He's a good player, Travis, to be fair, but he was asking for that.
Okay, well, slam dunking is a big positive then. Alassane.
Tom will have a better wrestling word for that.
Chalk slam.
Yeah, I think pretty much was. Rock bottomed him, didn't he?
Cool.
My positive was that he did look rapid. I think there were a couple of times yesterday where he seemed a little bit uncomfortable on the ball. Like the first touch wasn't all the way there. He didn't look kind of too sharp, but you can't really judge it after coming off the bench. I think you said it last week or the week before that, you know, if you come off the bench, you need time to catch up with the game, really. I think he did look rapid even when Lewis Travis had him by the collar and was trying to drag him across the floor. So I'd like to see how fast he can go when someone doesn't have hold of him. I think he needs to get the baby oil in his arms as well.
Yeah, get the baby oil out. Yeah, I think it's too early for Alassane. There's nothing really there for me that stood out. Nothing really that was negative, to be honest. It was just kind of he just come up from six divisions in the championship. He's going to be rusty. He's going to look off the pace a little bit to some extent because the game's a lot faster and people are technically better. Yeah, I think it's too early. I think he's going to obviously be in and around the first team, but other than that, I think there's probably nothing else to say. But I was judging at Christmas. There you go. Judging him at Christmas. I might get a T-shirt out of that. Judging at Christmas. But let's move on and let's chat about Coventry then, because after the international break, we're ahead to Mark Robbins' Coventry City at the Ricoh Arena. Guys, I'll pass the mic over to you guys. Let's break Coventry down this week.
Well, I've got a bit of form to start off with. So they lost 2-0 yesterday against QPR. But before that, they seemed to be doing all right. They had a 2-1 win against Reading, 1-0 win away at Blackpool. Lost 1-0 to Barnsley before then, but then 1-2-1 first of the season at Nottingham Forest, against Nottingham Forest at home as well. So they seem to be on a decent bit of form. They've lost against one of the stronger teams in QPR there, but other than that, they seem to be pretty much doing well and, don't know, maybe solidifying themselves around kind of that mid-table area this season.
Yeah, I will already hold my hands up and say that I was wrong about Coventry in my pre-season predictions. I did have them as one of the relegated teams. But
look at Huddersfield. Fourth?
Yeah, it's mental, isn't it? This division is crazy. But no, I don't feel like Coventry will have second season syndrome. I think they've got a really good team. Callum O'Hare, of course, is just a fantastic
player.
Majestic
to watch.
Yeah, one of the most exciting players in the Championship. And actually, they are one of the top teams for possession one in the final third. And I think it's because of Callum O'Hare. His pressing from the front is fantastic. It's one of his biggest traits, of course, with dribbling and carrying the ball. I think he ranks pretty highly in terms of chances created per 90. I think he might actually be the top. I might have to check that out. But they've got some good players as well. I really like Darbo, the wing back, Gustavo Hammer as well. And they've recruited quite smartly, I think. They've brought in players that I think are well adept and suited to Championship football, like Simon Moore, the goalkeeper, Martin Waghorn up front, who'll get you 8, 9, 10 goals a season. So, I'm hold my hands up and say I was wrong about Coventry. Brilliant for them that they're back at the Ricoh as well. That's a massive plus for their fans being back at their stadium. And I suppose it's not really so much stats, a statistical look at Coventry this week. I think we'll put out a thread of a few tweets of stats about Cov probably earlier, closer to the game. But yeah, I think my personal thoughts on Coventry, good team, really like them. I think they're a progressive club. And I do hope they stay up. They will be a big test for Borough.
Yeah, they were my team to watch last year, and I thought they would do it. But I thought when they brought the new signings in this year, I thought they might potentially struggle a little bit. But credit to Mark Robbins and his staff. I think they've done a fantastic job at Coventry. And I think if Neil Warnock leaves this season or at the end of the season, or we don't renew his contract, I am 100% backing Mark Robbins to get the Borough job if he was available. I think with Borough's a change in approach, bringing young players in, he has shown time and time again that he can do it with a good side and with a shoestring budget as well. But Dana, is there any more to add at all?
Yeah, I've just found the Callum O'Hare stat of chances created per 90. He's actually top in that respect, for 2.8 chances created per 90. So an incredibly fantastic talent of just creating chances, being a threat. I don't know whether you saw the game against Forest where he nutmegged Jack Colback in the build-up for one of their goals. He's just a fantastic player and definitely one to watch.
Absolutely. Well, let's chat about predictions then, guys. How are we feeling about Borough's away trip to the Ricoh Arena?
Well, based on that form that I've just read out there, they've not actually lost at home this season, other than a 2-1 loss in the EFL Cup against Northampton, which doesn't really count. I mean,
yeah, we don't care about that.
Don't care about the cup.
It was a cup that we won back in the day, but
yeah,
we don't care about that.
Yeah, we don't need it now. All right, wasn't it?
No, sights on the FA Cup
too big.
Now. But I think that being said, and you know, they do seem to be a decent kind of strong team at home. QPR and Barnsley both beat them. If we want to be pushing this season, we need to be at least equal in or better in those results. So I'm going to go 1-0 Borough.
1-0 the Borough. Dana?
I'm just thinking Callum O'Hare will really cause us problems. So I'm actually going to go with a 2-1 defeat.
2-1 defeat. I'm going to sit on the fence. I'm going to go 1-1 draw. I think I can definitely see Coventry scoring. But also, I think, you know, the Borough going to make additions. I think we'll be interested to see what the squad and how we line up. But I think it'll go 1-1, I think. But guys, thank you very much for joining me as always. And that's it. Borough heading into the first international break of the season with 13th place in from with 6
wish
points.
We'd
be top of the league, wouldn't we?
Yeah.
But it's still early doors and there's plenty of work to do. But judge us at Christmas. This has been the Borough Breakdown podcast. And that was all your Match Day Chatter in a pod. Up the Borough Breakdown.
Wants support. Curtis Fleming is there on the edge of the air. Fleming for Craig Hignett. Hit it, Higgy. Higgy hits the treble!
Romanelli coming alive again. Janino wants the ball played to him. Ravinelli spots out Emerson!
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud. Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.